I'm very happy to be joined here by Kavita Gupta, head of Consensus Ventures. Today we're going to be talking about the future of blockchain, but just before we get into that, I think it's a good idea to also get in, present ourselves and basically let you know who we are and what we do. My name is Mix and I'm the editor of HardFork, but just for today I'll be moderating a couple of interviews, so I'll let more experienced people talk over me. We had the chance to talk at the Next Web conference in Amsterdam earlier in May. That was a wonderful conversation. We discussed some of Consensus Ventures' investment strategies. But for those of you unfamiliar with Consensus Ventures, can you give us an idea of what the company does and what your role within the company is?
Yeah. So Consensus was started in 2015. It's basically a venture studio. So we have over 48 products internally incubated, like MetaMask, Truffle, Infura, Uport, etc. Then we have our advisory arm. Actually, we have a very huge office in London, which is headquarters for Europe. So we have an advisory arm. We are the official advisor to European Union, Government of Dubai, Government of India, etc. Then we have Consensus Academy, which has amazing engineers going through amazing course and coming up being strong Ethereum Solidity developers. And then we have Consensus Ventures, which is investing in companies across the world as an external investors, as a traditional way. We are a little different because we started as one of those unique VC hedge funds where we invested both in equity and tokens, and now we are mostly into equities given the market, but we are waiting to get market getting more more unique and creative in the future to go back to our token model.
And that's actually pretty interesting, that thing that you mentioned, that your model has evolved. And I guess that one of the reasons for that is that the market unfortunately has been going through a difficult time since the massive hype in December and January. It has dropped in value by almost 80 to 90%, and this is starting to affect the space as well. Just over the last couple of weeks, there has been a number of companies that have had to dig deep in their reserves to stay alive. Many companies, including Spank Chain, some development teams on the Ethereum Classic team have had to go through layoffs. Consensus itself recently announced that there's been a small downsizing of 13% in order to stay more focused and also to better use its assets. And Joe Lubin, your co-founder, has already explained that the idea is that you're not focusing on profit but instead on growth, and you want to push blockchain technology further so then the market can perhaps pick up. And I was wondering, you said that previously you used to depend on a hybrid strategy for investments in which you invest into equity and then into tokens, but now you're slowly evolving. And I was wondering, was that a response to the market, or was it a new solution in order to stimulate growth in a better way?
Yeah, so I think combination. So we started focusing more on equity very early on. I think this year, January, February itself, most of our investments have been on the equity side. The reason being because Consensus has been not only very pivotal to the ecosystem, but also with respect to legal, started working and understanding how SEC and other players are gonna start working. Our legal team was very, very way ahead than anybody in the market to understand what could be or couldn't be a potential problem. And on the venture side, they have been advising us very early on. So they kept on keeping us in the loop that, hey, there could be problems, like as an investor to go into utility tokens. There may be some sort of legal issues which we should be very aware. And if you have any branding as Consensus, because you are such a big player in the ecosystem, you also have to take responsibility. So in earlier times, it was like, hey, as a VC, you go and you try to make the maximum profit versus how much responsibility do you want to take for the ecosystem? And I think our legal team and Consensus, especially Joe, took us somewhere in the balance that we have to be responsible while not losing everything on profitability either. So we started walking towards equity very early on, but we also saw the emergence of governance token, non-fungible token, security tokens coming in, and it became very important for us to start spending more time into looking at the evolution of the market than going just blindly because pump and dump. We haven't released a single token from our whole portfolio. We were never into it for pumping and dumping. And actually that made us stand out among a lot of our peers also, and created more interest and more faith among the entrepreneurs of why we are here and we are here for the long game. So that changed our, that made us evolve. And even now we are evolving. Now we have started paying more attention into security tokens. We have started paying more attention into non-fungible tokens, and also keep on refining our investment thesis around it.
Can you go into the process of refining that investment strategy, and what were some of the challenges you met? Because I think for people listening, it's always interesting to hear about a company going through a problem and then finding creative ways to solve that problem. And I think it's also it's a very interesting concept, and you're also in a field where you're working on stuff that hasn't been done before. Yeah. You're changing the rules in a way, and when you change the rules, you also need to come up with new solutions.
Yeah, as you said, we are working in a space where nobody has worked before, including us, right? So we are also learning how the markets are, and we are also evolving with the market. Now, fortunately for Consensus Ventures, we have a big ecosystem of Consensus, and we have some of the leaders of the market always helping us and making us think through what could be the future or what couldn't be the future. So looking ahead. So going to the same thing, I think we started looking at utility tokens when they started they had a very good thought process that, hey, let's crowdsource it. Instead of having those 20 people and 20 companies in Sand Hill Road, let's go and let's start taking money from all over the world who should have stake in it. But then it's somewhere down the road, it just started becoming a joke that, like, a white paper raising $100 million and disappearing. There was really nothing when it came to who are the founders, what are their background, what are they really bringing, why are they the right team to actually make it happen. It suddenly became like a big financial speculation game across the world, and people started investing purely on that purpose. I know a lot of my friends who started investing, and I'm like, do you even understand what you're investing into? And they didn't even remember one line from the white paper. So that gave us indication very early on that this is not a sustainable model. This is not how, as a VC and as responsible to your LPs, you want to be in. As an individual, maybe, like, I want to short on things, but, like, this is not how you invest responsibly. And that's the time when we started moving, let's go to equity, let's start seeing what is going to make the market. And if it's, if tokens are only for making money with respect to speculation, and it's not going to really add to the value of the company, and in the long run, those tokens are not going to be financial revenue system for the company, then what's the point? So we came up with the dual model where we started investing in equity but mapped them into tokens, so that in the future, whatever form of tokens would survive, which we still don't know, we still do it this way, there could be like new standards, new method of tokens, which are legally sustainably would be reason for the revenue mechanism, financial viability of the company, then we will have a pie or a piece of those tokens. But let's go through now with equity, build the companies up, and let's see where do we land in a year or two.
So I guess that also makes sense when you're trying to grow the sector and not necessarily make profits. And I think in the middle of that drive to grow the whole industry is the idea of tokenomics and the token economy. Can you maybe give us a little summary of the token economy as a concept?
So token economy, as I understand, like, we all know, we just talked about how utility tokens started.
Yeah.
Right? So a concept that, hey, if you want to buy services on my platform, you have to use my token. First of all, you need a token for the settlement of any payment system or the services on blockchain. That's how it all started. I think the first utility token was Ether, because Ether was always launched as a gas. So it was a gas price to pay, and then you settle it because it's on the system. So it started like that, and then people came up with things where you really don't need tokens. You can literally pay for USD. I don't understand, why do you have to have tokens to do that? So for an example, we have a portfolio company, Constam, and you need to buy tokens because you're doing smart contract auditing. Now, you're doing it automatically. You want to have minimum human intervention on it, at least at the first three stages. So you pay the currency, you get it done, and you go out, and it's settled immediately when your system is running. makes complete sense to me. But then there are tons of things, like why do I need tokens to buy groceries? Why can't I pay in dollars or GBP or something? You know, it just didn't make sense. What is settling in 20 seconds, which cannot settle in 1 day or like 3 hours, you know? So I think those were the things we started questioning about utility tokens, and that's where it went out. I understand if you need tokens if you're doing cross-border settlements, right? But if you're just buying toys and shopping or something, I don't understand why you need it. You can have security, privacy, ownership of your data without using token system, but just using smart contracts. So that's when we started moving. Now, non-fungible tokens for me are very interesting because you are now...
How so?
You're doing art collectibles, right? So non-fungible tokens are not something you can put in the market and create a pump and dump. This is actually to settle a digital collectible, and they have a value associated, and that value still settles in your fiat, right? So non-fungible tokens are not listed on exchanges. You still have to settle them in that. So you're bidding in a native token or a native platform, and instead of doing it in USD, you're doing it in tokens so that you can buy immediately. So that is something I can still understand, and I'm a huge fan of it because it's opening up a whole new market of artists and like type of painters, which I'm very big fan of. Now moving towards governance tokens or staking work tokens, etc. Again, they are not related to financial markets. They are related to technology, what you need for your particular platform. You may have an app which you need a consensus algorithm. Every time you make a decision by a couple of people staking and using work governance token and voting for it based on decision. And that's fine because you are creating a mechanism. You are not putting financial markets or people's money on it. Then security tokens on the other side is something, the next generation tokens, which I think a lot of people are bullish on, including
me. It seems there's been a huge change from raising ICOs to raising STOs. And it feels last year when we spoke about that.
We were talking, yeah.
So we spoke about STOs. And one thing that you mentioned, which really struck me, was that you see companies raising so much money without having an idea how they're going to use it. And this year we're seeing a bunch of companies that raised an ICO and raised plenty of funds to basically build a product are now resorting to raising STOs as well, which suggests that they didn't perform so well. But anyhow, I'm getting off topic. So one of the things that Consensus has also been working on recently is Tachyon. I think you just completed your first class?
First cohort, as we...
Cohort?
I don't want to call it a class.
Okay.
but absolutely first cohort. And we had 16 companies worldwide. And we basically they spend the first 2 weeks in San Francisco, last 2 weeks in San Francisco. I think we did touch upon it last time when we were in Amsterdam, and we just launched it. The applications. The reason was because we were seeing these two big gaps. There were a lot of amazing technologists around the world who were like coming up with great ideas and great tech, but they still didn't have exposure how to build product, how to have customer acquisition, etc. So they were not ready for VC, but we could see a huge potential in those teams. And similarly, on the other side in Silicon Valley, we were seeing amazing serial entrepreneurs and product managers from the top 10, 15 tech companies who wanted to take that leap, but they wanted to test it somewhere before they leave their cushion jobs and become a part of this hurdle. So we basically mix match both, and we created Tachyon. Actually, one of our portfolio company, Netherstorm, won your pitch competition yesterday.
Yeah, that was pretty
yeah,
cool.
And they're here, so big shout out to them.
We wrote about that on our website as well, so for everyone who wants to check out what they do, you can go on Hardfork and read about that.
Yeah, and they were the classic case, because the founder, Max, when we talked to him, we were very, very blown away with his background in gaming and like the platform he wanted to build. But it was also not ready for a VC investment for like a 1%, 2% company. And so we didn't want to let it go, but we also didn't know how to put it into our thesis of writing a 500K check. And now we are very, very excited. They went through the program where they got advisors from Google, Facebook, Uber, Airbnb, etc. At the same time, they got to interact with founders of MetaMask, Truffle, and Fura, Uport, Ujo, etc. To actually build the balance between Web 2.0, Web 3.0.
So at the time we spoke at the Amsterdam conference, I think Tachyon was just getting started, and we spoke that the model that you preferred for that at the time was the hybrid model we mentioned in the beginning of this talk, basically investing in equity and tokens. And I've noticed that, can you first of all give us an idea how many of the companies within Tachyon, of those 16 companies, have their own token? And how many of them don't have a token and you just invested into equity? And was there a difference in the offer that you made for companies that had a token and then in the offer that you made for companies without a token? And what's the reasoning that goes behind that?
So all the companies we picked or ended up at Tachyon, they were all early stage companies. A couple of them had their products already out and had the traction, but none of them had tokens already. So one of the very big asset which we have is not only have a lot of lawyers spend their time with them, but also to have our token design team spend time with them and make them think through the economics of it, which for them, if they go outside and try to get that idea, will cost anywhere between 20 to 50K. We did equity deals with all of them, so we did 7% equity, 2.5% token if they ever do tokens, irrespective of what point.
Is that a standard fee for all Tachyon members?
That's the standard deal with everybody. Okay. We went with everyone like that. And I think we were looking to see how many of those companies on demo day launched their tokens. Nobody did. Also, basically because of the market, I would say predominantly because of the market, but I do see very strong use case of tokens for three of the companies.
Okay, so I guess a good question would be, what happens with the Tachyon, with the first Tachyon cohort after they've completed the whole accelerator program?
We had a big demo day. There were around 87 VCs present in the hall. All around the world, we had VCs coming from China, from Hong Kong, from Singapore. We had a lot of Silicon Valley and New York investors. I do know for three companies for sure that they had term sheets for multi-million dollar closings.
That is pretty good.
Yeah, so we did get a couple of winners out of it. I do know that we had two open source projects included who were not raising money, but they got so much awareness that they got some consulting gigs out of it from VCs to understand and help their portfolio companies. And it just happened in November. So we are also hoping in January, a lot of next round of funding would start.
This is a bit of an uncomfortable question, but it's always bound that from 16 companies, it's likely not every company can succeed. And everyone keeps on saying that 90% of the blockchain companies are going to die. I don't want to make speculations about that, but I think it's also a good, it's fair to say that a lot of companies won't succeed, especially if the technology doesn't evolve. So what happens, have you had an example like that? And if that happens, does Consensys offer any advisorship for such companies and what they can do to go forward?
So I think there are two or three different things out here, right? So if you look at a traditional VC world coming from that background, 95% of the companies dies anyways. Not every company in your portfolio, even if you are Sequoias of the world, works. I know two, three companies which are right now we are looking at coming from Andreessen and we had to pass because they died, you know. I think it's just the game of the system. When you wear your VC hat, you are hedging. You're completely hedging. And for you to win, all you need is like three companies or four companies out of the whole mix to win.
So basically, the idea is that in order to stimulate innovation, you have to take a risk.
You have to take a risk, but that doesn't mean you pick bad companies. You use your best judgment. Your team works really hard. Like, we have a team of 8 people. All of us sat down before making decision on each company, and all of us had our reasons why we are picking that company. And we all come from different backgrounds. So it was a very thought through decision. And for us, each one of them were winner. And it is also very interesting for us, like after the demo day when a lot of VCs started like connecting with us, picking up one or two companies to connect with, was also very interesting for us to learn.
Oops.
What did I
say? I think there's an alarm. Is the market going down? Okay, the market is fine.
Are you sure we are safe? I think it must be a PR team or something saying I said something wrong. No, I'm kidding. I think for us, there's very strong reasons why we picked each company. And when every VC or like when they're doing through diligence and ask us, we share our reason owning it. Now, it's also interesting for us to see how they see it as an external party after going through the whole thing. So it's interesting, but we do know for us, Tachyon has been successful because three of our companies have already raised and given us like multiple X returns.
That's a lot better than 5% of winning companies compared to the...
Yeah.
So it seems like you're already doing well. Okay, so I have one final question. Given that Consensus mostly works with Ethereum-based companies, it seems that Ethereum would need to evolve for Consensus to succeed as well. I don't know if you agreed with that, but I see one of the main problems with Ethereum has been that it's not fast enough to process millions of transactions and basically supply millions of people. Vitalik Buterin has already announced plans to work on several different protocols that can improve that. What is the worst case scenario for Consensus in the future? And then what is the best case scenario, assuming that everything goes fine?
I can't really say what's the worst case scenario for Consensus because I wish I would be in Joe's position, but I'm not. So his view of it is way bigger than my view.
What about the best case?
I could say the worst case scenario for the whole ecosystem is if we don't come together and really push the technology. I am actually not phased with the prices because it has really helped simulate people's focus on technology and get things out and not carried away with $1 million coming out of thin air, you know. So I think this is the perfect time for everybody to go back on technology, focus on it, which Ethereum Foundation, Ethereum developer community has already been doing, and work on scalability, as you said, whether it's ZK Snarks, whether it's sharding, whether it's Plasma, whether it's, we have invested recently into 3 to 4 different companies who are working on the scalability solutions. So I think that's going to go through. The best case scenario is that the technology comes back, all the bottlenecks comes back, and like all the bottlenecks get resolved, and the technology is like shooting as it was always supposed to be, and the prices gets better also, and the balance of both, of course, is the best case scenario.
Well, let's hope that that happens. I think we're running out of time, and we're going to close that session. But thank you so much, Kavita, for joining us.
Thank you so much.